Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Welcome, everyone, to the Macko and Cause podcast. I got to get this thing going because with Zoom, now you got to pay for longer meetings. I don't know how long this is going to go on for. Bob is heating up coffee. We got to talk about Thor, Doctor Strange. And Bob, I have a lot of questions to ask you about dogs. So we got a packed episode.
Oh, my gosh. I want to talk to you about the last day of school, which it is today. And of course, NBA free agency, which is about to start. So, yeah, let's just dive right in. Oh, okay. Before we do, I should apologize. Our intention was for us to be in the same place, but we have to Zoom it today because I had a last minute meeting come up at noon.
Lame. So. Anyway. So much to get into. Okay. I want to start here. I was looking after my brother's dog for 4 or 5 days. First question, when your dog poops, do you look away to give the dog some dignity?
I do not. And not only that, the dog looks at me and locks eyes.
Oh,
so we're like in this kind of Vulcan mind meld while she's pooping.
That's disgusting. What are the politics for you when you're walking your dog? And like, because what I realize is when I walk a dog, your head is always on a swivel. Cars, poop on the ground, other dogs, other dog owners. How much time should I let my dog sniff another dog's butt? It's exhausting.
Yeah. You know what, Matt? And it's probably not the first time I've mentioned this, but as somebody with income,
yeah,
no kids,
yeah,
a girlfriend,
yeah,
and no pets that you have to really take care of.
Of course.
Your life's unbelievably easy.
I know. It's great.
Yeah. Basically, you've removed any obstacle that might prevent you from making your day about you.
I know. It's great. I spent last night watching Doctor Strange and some old episodes of The Simpsons. It was a delightful night with a New Zealand Bordeaux blend. But enough about me.
I doubt that.
Yeah, I doubt that as well. But I just got to say, I love taking care of this dog. His name's Louie. He's awesome. But I was thinking about the entire time I'm on the walk. You've got to do 1,000 little mini calculations.
You do. In some ways, I think that responsibility keeps you accountable and accountability makes you a better person. Mm. Now, I may tell myself this because I have a lot of responsibilities and I don't want to hate my own life.
Yeah.
But I do think it's true. Once again, could be my Catholic upbringing, that responsibility makes you a better human being. It definitely doesn't make you a happier one, though.
No.
And it seems kind of weird that life is constructed so that that which makes you better does not make you happier.
That's a bad mantra, but often a correct one.
If I could go back and do it again, I'd try to care about 90% less stuff.
That low?
Yeah. Yeah, maybe 95. I think Sandra makes the cut. Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah.
You know what? It's kind of like a rebuilding franchise. Like, you know what? There are no untradeables.
God, that makes me feel like we should talk about Bradley Beal for a moment.
Well, we will get to free agency for sure. No, your thing about dogs is dogs, especially when they're young, are a lot of work. As they get older, they're pretty much, they know how to, they're veterans. They know how to get ready for a game.
Yeah.
They don't need much coaching. But the pooping thing is weird. I think you just get used to it. It's kind of like with kids, your life just becomes about fluids for 5 or 6 years. Like you just get used to it.
Ugh. Can I tell you the creepiest thing this dog did?
Hmm.
So this dog is an absolute suck. It always stays within 8 inches of my leg. Like you could have Milkbone Mountain, but it's no, Matt's over there. I'm in there. It's a suck.
Okay.
So I get into bed and of course it jumps up and it doesn't wake up early. It just wants to lie there with you. As long as you're there, it's not moving. But the dog in the middle of the night or right before I went to bed, it sat up and it started barking at my door. That is so creepy. I'm like, Louie, what are you barking at? Is it a ghost? Is it a burglar? dog barking into darkness is creepy.
You know, I'll take that one step further. dog cowering for no apparent reason.
Oh, shit.
Like, you know how in horror movies, they usually have the dog just barking randomly at a wall and then afraid and runs away?
Yeah.
Nothing good happens after that.
Oh, you're right. Dog cowering, way scarier than dog barking.
Dog barking for sure, right? Because it indicates trouble's coming. But dog cowering indicates the dog's figured out, fuck this. Like, I can't win this. So I got to get the hell out of here.
Okay. One thing to add to that. What's worse? Dog cowering when you're alone at night in a room, or you're walking in the woods and suddenly all the thousands of birds are flying in the opposite direction in which you're walking in.
That's so funny. Well, that's every disaster movie where the birds all of a sudden are flying away.
Yeah.
That's always like the first sign that trouble's coming.
Yep.
The birds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one day we should do a chart of things we learn from animals in movies.
That's right at the top of the list.
Yeah. Yeah. The cat always likes the witch.
Oh, that's true.
Right. The cat will always purr and like wrap itself around the witch.
Nothing says I'm out of water in the desert like the sound of a rattlesnake.
Oh, and the growling bear, like on its hind legs roaring.
Yeah.
Is always the beginning or somewhere towards the middle of the wilderness movie where the protagonist realizes I'm going to have to really get back to nature to get through this.
And also it's the moment right before all that work you put in and making that homemade spear is going to do jack shit.
I love the whittling the spear scene.
Oh, you know, it's so good.
Right. I'm sitting there and look at me. I'm whittling it to a fine point.
Oh, okay. We're going to soak in the sports.
We're the worst. We talked about how focused we were going to be.
Yeah.
And here we are.
But one more thing. The whittling the spear scene, can it ever be done by someone who's clean shaven? It's always a beard.
Never. And it's, there's always like the streaks of mud on the face.
Yes.
Yeah. Mud and beard indicates that you're ready to do this. Okay, let's talk NBA free agency. I mean, you know, the cup was won, but it was won days ago and it wasn't won by the Leafs, so who cares? Free agency. I'm going to rattle through some names and I kind of want to play a game with you if you're okay with this, Matt.
Let's do it.
Tell me what you think and then how would they look in a Raptors uniform?
Got it. Yeah.
DeAndre Ayton, not a free agent, but a name that's being thrown around a lot right now. Thoughts?
In theory, he would look great because what he did 2 years ago and even what he did in the regular season this year. However, there's only so often it works with having a traditional big man. Would that really work with Siakam? And Bob, why did he only play 17 minutes of game 7 when Phoenix lost to Dallas?
I think this, like, maybe not the best example of, but it feels like all these really big names have a big issue attached to them. There isn't just the let's go get LeBron, he'll win us a championship. It's like there's some really great names in play, but all of them have question marks. Like I was thinking about Jimmy Butler and how Jimmy Butler went through a bunch of teams and he fought with coaches and he fought with players, but nobody ever questioned, does Jimmy Butler want to win? DeAndre Ayton has the question mark around him. Like, was he upset because he wasn't being used right? Which is not the same as I'm mad at Karl-Anthony Towns because he's not tough enough.
There was always the talk about he was spending all his time playing video games till 3-4 in the morning. And when you get benched by one of the best coaches in the NBA, and listen, he's young, things can change. It puts a bit of a red flag.
Yeah, I could see him fitting in beautifully with the Raptors.
Of course.
But at the same time, and maybe this is just like, I don't know, like, an idealist talking about it, but I like our team. I kind of don't want there to be dicks on our team just for the sake of winning.
Yeah.
You know, it would be nice if we could get back to a final and have everybody on the team, someone you actually like, which brings me to my next name, Matt.
Good.
Once again, not a free agent per se, but somebody who's in play right now, potentially. What are your thoughts on Kevin Durant these days?
He's a little bit desperate. And I don't mean that in a critical way. I mean, he's smart enough to know he needs to win one of these titles where he's the guy, like mm-hmm. LeBron doing in Cleveland, like Steph, the last one in Golden State. He knows his legacy is at stake here. And, you know, he might not want to admit it, but deciding that, going and trading for Harden or teaming up with Kyrie, probably not the best choices.
Can you think of any player as great as Durant who managed to muddy up his reputation? Almost, it was just like a bad decision and bad luck. It's not even like it has anything to do with him. He's incredible. He's still a top three player in the league. But, you know, he's 35 now. And he went to Brooklyn, and we all kind of just threw up our hands and said, how many titles will they win?
Yeah.
But it really has a – can you think of anybody who looked like they had just won the lottery and shit the bed so bad as him?
I got one name for you, Bob.
What's that?
Axl Rose.
I saw them play when there was none of the Roses. It was just Axl.
Oh.
Nah, wasn't that great.
But think about it. Use your illusion too. That's Golden State with Klay, Steph, Draymond, and Durant. And soon, like, Guns N' Roses was the biggest thing in rock in North America. And then you blink, and suddenly it's all grunge.
That's such a great point, because Axl was on the cusp of becoming unquestionably one of your top five frontmen of all time.
Yeah.
And he's still great, and everybody still loves him, and everybody still respects him. But there's a whole legacy of awesomeness that just didn't happen. You're right, actually. He's a bit like the Pavel Bure in the sense that he didn't play that long, but when he played, he was spectacular.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's actually a really good analogy. You know, I'm looking at, you know, the Kevin Durant thing is so tied into the Kyrie thing, though. And Kyrie has now opted out of his deal, so who knows where he lands? Who knows how he lands?
Well, Kyrie is supposed, like he said, I'm opting in for my last year here in Brooklyn. Now, they
Sorry, I got that wrong.
Kyrie's there's so many names and RFAs and UFAs and opting in and team option and player option. It gets confusing. The most fascinating thing for me is Kyrie is very much anti-authority. You know, when he says sometimes you don't really need a coach, or you know what, me and the owners and Kevin, we'll figure this out together. Like he said after they lost to Boston. So you have that. But then management said, we don't trust you to give you all the years and money you want. And Kyrie then, you know, does whatever his little power play was. No team was like, yeah, we really want you. Kyrie now goes back to a team where he knows management doesn't fully trust him. Does that work with someone who's got the mind of a grade 7 yearbook quote?
That's a great line. Have you used that on the air yet?
Many times.
So good. Is it yours?
Oh, Bob, it's mine. It's 100% mine.
Yeah, you should feel good about that one. I hope you do. You know, it's funny because I'm looking at everything that's going on and there are so many big names in play. You kick it over to the NHL and, you know, Kevin Fiala moved.
Okay.
You know, we're talking about the apples and oranges in terms of free agent excitement.
Palat. He's in the playoffs. You know.
But I don't know. I kind of feel with this free agency with basketball, like a lot of reasons why these guys are moving around is they seem to be as problematic as they are great.
Yeah. And they, I think part of it is just player empowerment going a little too far, but you know, we've debated that so much, but no, here's one for you, Bob.
Okay.
What do you do if you're Washington?
I don't know.
Do you give Bradley Beal, like, I guess you have to, the full max for a guy who can never be a number one?
So here's my comparison for Bradley Beal. I feel like he's Dame Lillard in the East in the sense that he's undeniably an outstanding player.
Yeah.
He's undeniably been in a situation where he's never had the pieces around him, or there's been something or other that's come up where we've never really seen him. There's always been something, you know?
Yeah.
Like Dame had CJ McCollum, they were a rising young team, but they never really had a roster that could compete. You know, Bradley Beal had John Wall, but there were problems there. Like, whose ball is it going to be? So I don't know beyond the numbers that we really even know who Bradley Beal is, but we do know now that he's 30 and he's going to get about $250 million. And
yeah,
you know, does he deserve it? Probably not. Will somebody give it to him? Probably.
Yeah. And think about this, Bob. Like, if he's healthy, he's going to score you 27 to 30 points per game. Yeah. And Washington is going to be fighting for the play-in.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's got a Russell Westbrook feel to it in the sense that the numbers are going to be there probably for a while. You know, Russ's numbers this year weren't that bad. But there's just something about it where you're like, can we build a winner here? You know, like you look at like a Luka Doncic and, you know, that guy's going to be a winner for the next 10 years. That's where you want to put your money. You want a stock that is still on its way up, you know? But if you're Washington, like, do you sign and trade? Do you just say, like, we're going to start again? Like, Washington's been such a bad franchise. I don't know. Like, I think they'll keep them because they just have to have something. You know, you still got to sell season's tickets.
And that's it, Bob. But from a winning perspective, that feels doomed. But I agree with you. Like, the best guy that moved, then the biggest move was Dejounte Murray going from San Antonio to Atlanta. He is a perfect player. He's great defensively. He can score. He's great without the ball. He'll be perfect with Trae Young. And San Antonio read the tea leaves and they're like, we keep this guy. That's going to help our season ticket base. But big picture, that's not how we're going to win. That's like, by the, you know, we need to bottom out. So they trade him for a bunch of picks.
And we've seen this in the NFL with quarterbacks. Like, I'm already reading questions about, you know, should the Jets be looking for a quarterback? And this is coming off of Zach Wilson's season, which was, you know, fine for a kid. But already people are worried, like, he's not amazing and maybe he never will be. Like, you get so trigger happy because you realize if you hold on to your mistake too long, you doom your franchise for a 5 to 10 year period.
Correct.
But, man, we have to make, like, we, like, they have to make these decisions so quickly now and based on not great information.
Bob, I'm going to use that and I'm going to circle back to your dog cowering on your bed late at night analogy. Are you ready?
Sure.
That dog is Jalen Brunson's father, Rick Brunson, and the darkness is the Knicks.
I did want to bring this up. Okay, go for it. You sound like you're loading up a thought of the day.
Yeah, this was a previous one.
But okay.
Dallas can give Jalen Brunson more money in term. The Knicks can give him more field goal attempts. And Brunson, who, listen, was great when they beat Utah in the first round without Luka, and was a great contributor when they beat Phoenix. He got a taste of Batman. He got a taste of that role. But if Jalen Brunson is your best player, you're not making the playoffs. Like, this, I want to warn Jalen. It's like, dude, stay with Luka. That's where the glory is, not where the Knicks, where you'll get 23 shots a night.
This reminds me in a backwards way of the Tracy McGrady, Vince Carter situation.
Yeah.
You get a young player who's now all of a sudden showing something and everyone's whispering in their ear, you can be the guy. And it takes so much maturity to be able to say, I could be the guy, or I could stay here, be one of the guys and win a championship. And for a league that's built around individual players, like no other sport in North America, like team sport, depends on individual performance quite the way basketball does. It's just, you know, you can impact it one way or the other more in basketball than any other sport. So you could see how people come up with this, you know, like it's a culture of how many shots am I getting? How much am I doing? You know, and that's what gets you paid too. The Knicks are like, the fact that the Knicks are the ones who are interested should tell you Jalen's not the right guy.
Yeah. The Knicks are the corner of the haunted house in Blair Witch with the little girl staring in the corner. Nothing good's going to come when you go to that corner. And to your point about human nature, this would be so hard. If you are a professional basketball player, you have to have a very strong ego. You have to have this incredible level of self-belief to make it out of high school, university, in the pros. So now suddenly all that self-belief and positive ego, I'm not talking large, I'm talking strong ego. Now you've got to suppress that to say, nope, I don't mind being in the shadow of Luka. Versus me and Obi Toppin and maybe RJ Barrett.
Eventually, we'll have to start our Get RJ Out of New York campaign But, you know, there's this podcaster I really like named Scott Galloway, does a lot of work on business and tech. And I listen to his stuff. And he talked about something very interesting. People look at the year where they made the most money for whatever reason. And that kind of becomes, instead of the outlier year where they did great, it becomes how they perceive their value. Like, that's their real value. You know what I mean? And it's a really interesting, and I know I've done this too. I've looked at years where I've done really well and said, that's what I should be earning, as opposed to like my median year. And I think that's true for basketball players too. Like, this kid heats up, you know, and it feels like, oh, that's who he is. But that's not who he is. That's who he is when he's at his best, which is not the same thing. Who was the cornerback from Dallas who picked
Larry Brown?
Yeah, that's the one, right? And then gets the big deal. Was it from the Raiders afterwards?
From the wins the Super Bowl MVP and goes to the Dallas Cowboys because he got two interceptions in the Super Bowl against Neil O'Donnell and the Pittsburgh Steelers.
So I see you're familiar with this example.
And then you can go to the other one. Bob Desmond Howard returns a touchdown in the Super Bowl as the Green Bay Packers defeat the New England Patriots. And the Raiders come in and give him all that money.
So this is an example of how sometimes you at your best can be spun as, this is who this person is. I mean, it's true, you're capable of it, you did it, but how often is that really going to happen? That's how I feel about Jalen Brunson.
Yes.
You put him in a situation where he has more, is he going to look like that? Or does he look like that because Luka Doncic is a Mav? And I know he wasn't there for the whole playoffs, but players get hot. You can't take it too seriously.
Jerome James had a bunch of good games with Seattle against the Spurs. And then the Knicks gave him a contract that everyone else in the NBA laughed at.
There's two names that I love to bring up. One is Ronald Flip Murray, who was part of the Supersonics. That's how far back that goes. And for a minute, he was leading the NBA in scoring.
Yeah.
And then Mike Kafka, who was the third stringer quarterback during preseason for the Philadelphia Eagles. And he was lighting it up and people were saying, oh, could this guy really make a challenge for the top spot in Philly? And the answer is no, because this is preseason and this guy's nobody.
God, those are some random pulls. I got to tell you, Bob, I did not wake up on June 30th thinking we'd get some Mike Kafka talk.
Well, he's memorable to me because he's, you know, like Franz Kafka. Which I'm sure everyone was thinking. James Harden.
I'm curious to see how cooperative is he with Philly in terms of his next contract, where how much less money does he get to allow the team to build the roster around him? Harden's made all the money. So I am curious. Does he go full, you know, Nathan MacKinnon, Braden Point, and every NHL superstar not on the fucking Maple Leafs and takes a discount to help his team win? Sorry for that.
No, it was a beautiful moment of madness.
Yeah. But by the way, quick little sidebar here. If Palat doesn't demand $8 million a year, I'm going to be fucking angry. I want Bergeron to go, no, you're going to pay me for what I've done in the past. I want a Nikushkin or whatever the hell it is, that winger who had a great year with the Avalanche. Can we just once have other players do this? Just once?
I guess we could. We just haven't.
Never. Anyway, sorry. Harden, I'm curious to see what he does.
Yeah, it's a great point. If, you know, he was seen as such a failure for Philly, but the truth is he's still a good player. And I don't know who he is moving forward, but he's still good right now. And, you know, Joel Embiid is at the peak of his powers. With the right deal, could be good. You know, the wild card in all of this is Zach LaVine. Where he winds up going, he could be a balance of power tilter.
He could be. All reports say he's going to stay in Chicago. But you know what? Until the ink is on the contract, we have no idea. But yeah, you're right. Zach LaVine, last 4 years, he's averaging like 25 a game in the prime of his career. He's a hell of a player and does get overlooked a little bit.
And Rudy Gobert, depending on which team is desperate enough, might either make a really good deal because they don't give up too much for him, or a really bad deal because they've just taken on a guy who's, you know, obviously a defensively great player, but I don't know, can you win in the playoffs with them? That's another name. I'm just curious to see where he winds up and just what happens with Utah, because you got Gobert and you got Mitchell. I guess they could start the year with both of them, but maybe for the right deal, Danny Ainge pulls the trigger. And again, those could be balance of power guys.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
Rudy Gobert feels like Kirk Cousins.
Interesting.
Both of them put up lots of numbers, and both of them, everyone universally hates. Everyone, I don't know what it is. Everyone hates Gobert. Everyone hates Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. Is it because he doesn't have a flashy game, because he's just like a throwback player? Is it because he's French?
I don't know. But Rudy Gobert, everyone's agreed, is the one superstar that everyone shits on.
You know, he's been an all-NBA player 4 times.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's pretty good.
He is. And I understand sometimes in the playoffs, he gets hunted more than you would expect for a guy winning defensive player of the year. But I don't know. There's just something weird about Rudy Gobert where there's more negativity towards him than is deserved.
Let's talk, because we have no idea how much time we actually have. Let's make sure we get to Doctor Strange, because I got a comparison with the Leafs I want to make.
Yeah.
Why don't you do a quick Jeff Pollock, and then we'll come back and hit the Leafs and Doctor Strange.
Okay, not only is this a read, but to Jeff Pollock, when am I coming over to your place for a barbecue? Get that green egg out for me. Our sponsor on this podcast is our lawyer, Jeff Pollock. Helped me out with my will. I got it done ages ago. Hopefully, Bob will have it done at some point in the future. Anyway, if you need a lawyer, someone will give you the time and attention, not some big giant corporate monolith, but like a smaller law firm with a guy incredibly talented, Jeff Pollock, jeffpollock.com. That's Jeff with a G, jeffpollock.com. It's the one good thing in my life. Well, I've got a couple of good things. You know, my main problem is that dog going to poop? That means not bad. Anyway, but the one thing I don't have to deal with anymore is legal stuff, because I always know I got Jeff there when I need him, by call, by email, by text, jeffpollock.com.
So I don't want to get too much into Doctor Strange, because it's been out for a while and it just came up on Disney Plus, which is why I just watched it. And I think that's probably true for you too.
Yep. Watched it last night.
Out of 10, what do you give it?
5.5.
Yeah, I'd give it probably 4. They really slapped a good movie out of the, they seized like defeat out of the jaws of victory. I have a comparison to the Leafs though.
Do it.
All right. So put this in your mind. Nazem Kadri, when he wins the cup, says, everybody who thought I was a liability in the playoffs can kiss my ass, right?
Yeah.
He's clearly talking about senior management with the Leafs, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm watching Doctor Strange and I'm thinking, okay, there was a director change halfway through. Sam Raimi was brought in. Michael Waldron, who's a writer for them, was brought on to fix stuff up. There were tons of reshoots. And it would be easy to say that, oh, Sam Raimi made a bad film, or Michael Waldron didn't write a very good movie, or whatever. But that movie has Marvel written all over it. Like, the first hour is basically just set up for about another 10 movies. There's no plot. There's only, like, explaining stuff. Like, what is the multiverse? Or what is this? Like, and it made me think, like the Leafs, sometimes you can get mad at stuff. Like, even as far high up as Kyle Dubas. But in the end, the people who run the show are ultimately responsible for everything. And that's Shanahan and up. And I thought, it's been a long time since we've talked about having an MLSE problem. And for years, that was the case under the pension plan. And generally speaking, when we talk about bad ownership, it's in leagues without caps, because you can spend and maybe you don't. I think owners skate in leagues with caps because we recognize there's only so invested they can be. But owners create cultures. And I got to thinking about how maybe Marvel and MSC are a little bit similar, in the sense that they just didn't put the right people in place at the right time. When Nazem Kadri says this, maybe we shouldn't even be so mad at Kyle Dubas, because we don't know what he's being told to do. And that maybe in all of this, ownership needs to take more accountability than they have.
First, for the movie, the problem was they had decided, oh, we're going to make a Sam Raimi horror movie, but it was only kind of halfway there. But
The second half.
Yeah, yeah. The first half was explosions and explanations, to your point. And then the second half became a very different movie. It was weird. I think in the end, like, because I've thought a lot about the Leafs and the mistakes made by Shanahan and by Dubas, and there absolutely have been mistakes. But I think in the end, And, you know, I've always been critical of this team. How much of this comes down to the fact of timing, that Matthews, Marner, and Nylander, and Tavares all came into the Leafs' lives within a short period of time? Then three of them were all going to need extensions, all within the same short period of time. And then when the ink got dry, here comes COVID. So all your salary cap plans for the next decade are gone, and you better find 17 Michael Buntings.
Well, and to your point, you know, this is true of Marvel as well. Like, I think Doctor Strange was supposed to be released before WandaVision. And because of shooting schedules, they had to change the movie because WandaVision had to come out first. And they just needed something in the pipeline. So there was a lot of definitely luck is part of it. But it got me to thinking, Matt, and maybe I hope I'm making this point clearly enough, but we don't talk enough about ownership in sports. You know, they don't seem to have their direct hands on what's going on, but really, like,
because they're shadowing. Bob, sorry to interrupt, they're shadowing. When we rip the Cowboys, we always start with Jerry Jones because he does every press conference with a Johnny Walker Blue in his hand.
Well, that's it. And he's also chosen as the owner to be essentially the de facto GM, right?
Yeah.
So, and sometimes not so de facto. Here's the thing, though. Can you think of a great organization that didn't start with great ownership?
Nope.
I think we have learned to talk about GMs in a way, like when you and I were growing up, you know, the GM, like, you never really got higher up than the coach in terms of your blame.
Correct.
Then I think fantasy sports made us start hating GMs.
Yes. Yeah.
A bunch of these GMs got promoted to president, so we kind of learned what that position was. But we don't really go any higher than that. And it makes me think about how, and this is so true in life in general, like we've inverted the pyramid where we tend to blame the workers and not the owners.
I feel that was something we did so much more, say, when I started off the record in 2000. We still do it now. And I think we do it because they're the ones we see all the time. So yes, it's easier to blame because that's what our brains are looking at. But I think we do a lot better job now than we ever have in terms of looking at management and ownership. But you are right. The workers get more blame than they probably deserve.
And the owners get less blame than they probably deserve. Mm-hmm. You know, I was thinking about something Shanahan said once about why he went with Dubas over Lamoriello. And he said, I was in the room and I heard the discussions. I heard who wanted who didn't want who, all that stuff, right? Well, that's stuff we're not privy to. And in the same way, we don't hear the conversations around Shanahan and Dubas. We don't hear the conversations around the board and Shanahan. Like, it feels like there's this whole universe of stuff that happens, and all we get is the game, or all we get is the final movie. It's all we can judge. But we're getting kind of savvier to know, like, what we actually get is only part of the story.
Yes.
You know, how it's made. You know, like, I'm not ready to say we have an MLSE problem. I mean, Jesus, they, you know, Masai's there, TFC won a championship, you know. But when it comes to the Leafs, maybe there's just a blind spot and they're not doing a great job.
It's like the same way you can blame Sam Raimi for Doctor Strange, or you can get angry at Benedict Cumberbatch, but you got to look at the entire studio, the decisions they made, and the people that got fired.
100%. By the way, let's do a quick jump over, because I'm feeling more and more like Marvel is losing its luster, and it really needs, like, the Spider-Man movie helped, but there's just been a lot of mediocrity lately.
Yeah.
We decided we were going to do trailer reviews.
Yeah.
It's a bit long in the tooth, but Thor, Love and Thunder, as a trailer, what'd you think?
It's fantastic. It's absolutely fantastic. The music, it feels like I'm reading a 1978 comic book.
It feels like a ton of fun. And Taika Waititi is so funny.
Yes.
And Chris Hemsworth has, like, become his muse in a weird way. I'm a little bit worried about the Natalie Portman character. I think quietly her Jane Foster is one of the worst characters in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Agreed.
And she's never really gotten the scrutiny for that, because I think those movies that she was in were generally bad. She has the ability to maybe pull this movie down a little bit if she's not good. I'm aware of it. I'm not worried. I'm aware.
Yeah, it does feel a little novelty. And her job is to knock Hemsworth down a notch, because he's so beautiful, so you got to do something. So maybe she's been used more as a device. Hopefully, listen, same guy did Jojo Rabbit, and Scarlett Johansson was incredible in that. So hopefully we can get some version of that.
Did you think Natalie Portman was funny when she did the SNL sketch and they played her against type and she basically did like the gangster rap?
I thought she was fine. I thought everyone around it was great and the writers and the concept was great.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Like at the time, it was like, oh, this is hilarious and funny and she's playing against type. But if you ever watch it again, it's a pretty over-the-top performance and not necessarily in a great way. She's a tremendous actor, but I don't know if she can do comedy. So we'll see.
She's a system quarterback. She was a system quarterback in comedy. Just check down to the fullback in the flat, get the first down, move on.
You know, Marvel generally does such a great job of casting. You know, if you try to list the things that didn't work casting-wise, it's a pretty short list.
Yeah.
It might be what they do best. Just the final thought on this. I think they have a villain problem, though. Like, I kind of was hoping by the end of Doctor Strange, there'd be someone we could hang our hat on, like a Thanos-type character. Doesn't feel like it's going to be Scarlet Witch. And we're just hanging on, I think, till we get to Doom.
Hey, let's see what Christian Bale does, Bob.
You know what? Honestly, like, I feel like I've seen that character 50 times. It's like miscellaneous God Slayer.
Yeah, I know. You're right.
With random reason for wanting to destroy everything. Like,
also, when the villain is that powerful, it doesn't make them that compelling because they blow up worlds and destroy gods. But we're going to have to say this. Bob, all the best on your daughter's last day of school and graduation and all of that. Happy Canada Day. Enjoy the CFL like only you can do on this Canadian weekend.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.